Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Howdy.
Howdy.
How's it going?
It's going. I got home just in time.
Very cool. Very cool. Purnell will be here in about a minute because he usually shows up like on the hour exactly.
All right.
And then we got Dave K joining too. So
nice. I feel like I've met him once before. Not too long ago.
Possibly.
We'll see.
I don't remember who's met who anymore. So
yeah.
You're all strangers to me anyway, so. With dementia setting in, it's like new people every time I talk.
Ooh.
There's Purnell.
You.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Let me pull Dave howdy. In quick.
Oh, the howdy.
Howdy, Dave.
Hello.
How goes it?
That's going all right. I'm very tired. Just ate some ice cream, which probably isn't going to help.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. But I don't regret it.
It is delicious. It is delicious.
Yeah, I don't regret it at all.
That's but the spirit.
It is not going to elevate my energy levels for this, I'm afraid.
It's okay. No, it's a Sunday. There is no energy.
No, yeah, it's not a Sunday. It's ice cream. He had ice cream.
I had a whole bunch of carbs. I went to Olive Garden, so that was like a little over an hour ago. So
me too.
All right.
Olive Garden high five.
Fist bump.
Right. You got a big cannonball full of sodium just slowly dissolving in your stomach. Awesome. Hell yeah.
The sweet, sweet taste of
all right, who had more breadsticks? Let's get some numbers. Who had more breadsticks?
I had two and a half.
I struggled to eat one. I was trying not to eat more because they're so damn good.
We got a boat of Alfredo, so there was temptation to just like chow down. But then I didn't eat my meal. I ate like soup, breadsticks with Alfredo, and then I totally was just like two bites of my meal, and I was like, I need a box.
Their soup is really freaking good, though. I love their. They have like one that's like kale and beans. Yep,
the Zuppa Toscana. That's my favorite.
Yes, good taste. Good taste. I love
I make my own version of that at home during the winter. It's really good. I put cannellini beans in it. I do.
I do want. Send it to me.
All right. All right.
Purnell, for the record, you almost did a legit
fucking yeah.
And I'm very, very, very excited about that. I'm super happy
about it.
Would
have been worth it, too. Damn, that's I also had Alfredo, but I had the one it was like seafood Alfredo, and I had them at broccoli too.
Nice.
When this episode is over, I may go through the leftovers. I haven't decided yet, but it might be smart to leave.
Go through the leftovers now.
Fuck that! Eat them on the air. I had a sandwich the last time.
The whole point is carby and deliciously caloric.
Yeah. That's tomorrow.
No, tomorrow we want to hear you start eating that and then just slowly wind down like a Teddy Ruxpin who's battery is dying.
As the episode goes later, he just kind of slows down.
This game hasn't come out.
It's like, this is Purnell at the start of the show. And this is Purnell at the end of the show.
meanwhile, the rest of us are like,
fucking yeah! Wait a minute. You can't fucking yeah, I fucking yeah.
No, the purest democracy on the internet is the soundboard. Anyone can do that now.
Yes.
The dangerous game. But someone's got to play it.
Indeed. So yeah, what's up, everyone? This is the SML podcast.
Oh, wait, are we up? Have people been listening to this?
Yes, people have been listening to all of this, and I'm probably going to keep all of that because it's a lot.
Oh, yeah, don't cut. Leave this all in. Don't cut any of it.
Pernell's here. Bree's here. Dave K is here. How is everyone doing?
Craving super Toscana.
Yeah.
I'm wishing I had eaten more carbs so that I could. Maybe so. I was matching the energy levels of the rest of the show.
But you had ice cream. You're better off.
I did not eat pasta garnished with road salt earlier. Unfortunately, I'm not.
I have an important question that we have not discussed. What kind of ice cream did you have?
Oh, cookie dough.
Very good.
Okay.
Was it road salt ice cream?
It was not. It was not road salt caramel ice cream, I'm afraid. If only it had been. God, that's the dream, isn't it? Isn't that what we're all thinking about?
Now that's dairy heaven.
Fucking topped with road salt.
Yeah, just wait for the trucks to come by. Mouth open like a pervert.
Just running behind the truck with the salt shaker like open, trying to catch it in the back.
There's wisps of smoke from where it's like burning you wherever it touches you because it's so powerful.
Sold, I'm in.
that's about how I'm doing to answer your question.
How was everybody's weekend? Did anybody do anything fun this weekend?
I did.
Fun, but just too busy.
What'd you do, Brie?
There was no downtime.
I made sausage from scratch.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Bought the actual jacket and everything.
Had to case the sausage and everything. It's not 100% done. It still needs to all be smoked, but that's not my job. I was helping out. I'm a medieval reenactor, and there's a feast coming up, and so I was helping out make the sausage for the feast. It's a Roman recipe that we've recreated, and it has like pine nuts in it and cumin and juniper berries and like parsley. It's like very flavorful pork sausage.
God, it tastes like chin. That's going to be awesome.
We had to both use historic record and create the recipe interpreting that at the same time. So it's a combination of our own recipe and this historic record. So yeah.
So the measurements could go either way, but you're going to find out spontaneously.
We've tested it before, so this was the actual make. We've been doing testing for a couple months on and off, like with all the different things in this giant feast. So there's like lamb course, and there's a chicken course, and there's a bunch of different veggies, and this is in the first course with the salad. So
Labor Day will never be the same again. Damn, that sounds delicious.
Yeah,
that's why togas are so roomy,
right?
That is the express purpose.
Well,
is this an SCA thing?
It is. I'm in the SCA, yes.
I figured. That's what. The more you described this process, the more it sounded like that.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, the sausage put all of my humors back into balance.
Oh, well, perfect, because, you know, Galen would appreciate that.
I mean, I would hope so.
Yeah.
I got, I don't know which of my biles is overdone, but I got too much of one of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's like black bile and there's phlegmatic. There's all sorts of things in your humors you have to balance in medieval medicine. So, yeah,
that's true.
It's also crazy how long we actually had that as a system of medicine too. Like, it's a crazy long time.
If people knew how relatively short a period of time we've known of germ theory, they would have a much harder time like trusting.
Yeah,
it's part of that whole when people do the whole "I want to go back in time to this era." I'm like. Once you get the racism out of the way, you got the other part, which is, well, medicine
You really want to go back to before penicillin? Are you fucking insane?
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, yeah, it was a kinder, gentler time, but if you get sick, they'll just put some leeches on you and hope for the best.
Like, the only reason to want to go back pre-penicillin is if you want to be, like, a mid to late 19th century quack American doctor who just like made up shit and hoped people would go with it. Because that's what medicine was really up until after World War I.
Yeah.
If you had a leather doctor's bag and were like a white guy with some gray in your beard, you could diagnose anyone with anything and it would basically be accepted. It is insane how much leeway people were given.
But they were professionals, damn it.
Also, you could get cocaine in lozenge form back then. So, like, you got to take the good with the bad.
That.
You know, the strikes and gutters is all I'm saying.
Yeah, the amount of opium in, like, cough syrup and stuff was intense.
Or, like, Mother's Helper, which was served in barrels in, like, general stores and stuff, and was a mixture of laudanum and molasses you would give to children if they were being annoying.
Yep.
Which give your kids some whiskey to put them to sleep.
And brandy to, when their teeth were coming in. I think that was a thing.
Anyway, how many of you had your babysitter let you smoke their cigarette when you were a kid?
I'd hate my babysitter for that. That wouldn't have been the whoa, cool smoke. I'm like, fuck you. Good Lord.
I thought it was cool. My mom did it. My grandfather did it. My brother would do it. I thought it was cool. And the babysitter was like, here, do you want to try it?
Well, don't get me wrong. My dad smoked. My mom smoked. Many of my uncles and aunts smoked. And just the smell alone was like, fuck that. I did get to taste beer as a kid, and that tasted nasty too. Probably contributed to why I didn't drink till I was 23.
Yeah, my dad let me smoke when I was 12. He just told me not to let my mother know.
Oh, geez.
He would rather have me buy cigarettes than do something sketchy for them. So, like,
remember being able to buy cigarettes as a kid because your parents were too lazy to go to the store themselves?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Oh yeah, I bought cigarettes from my mom for years. That's how I got money for Garbage Pail Kids for a while. Then I recycled cans for it.
Now you have a massive collection of Garbage Pail Kids cards.
That's right. Gotta get my fix somewhere.
Yeah, you had to like throw things in actual garbage pails to be able to afford them.
But, recycle pails, yeah. Sir. So recycle pails.
Recycling bin kids. Yeah.
There you go. We weren't even gross. We were just responsible.
That's the woke alternative to garbage pail kids.
recycle bin kids. Sold.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
These prim and proper children.
Oh, Lord. How was your weekend?
Very active, honestly. I went to Baltimore for a friend, just our general party. Friend I don't get to see very often. And then after that, I came home. I opted to pay the stupid-ass $12 toll because I was too lazy to just take the long way. Today, I had lunch with my brother and my nephew. Recorded a promo line for a VGM podcast episode that a friend of mine is recording where it's like a wrestling promo where I'm like, Pernell the Pickler. I don't know why they came up with Pickler, but whatever. So I had to come up with a line for everybody. Like, well, I was trash talking. I was like, I'm a pickle all over this shit. Okay. But I did that. I mowed my lawn because my lawn was like freaking a month and a half grown. It was horrible, but it had to be done. It had to be done. And then again, like I said, then I went to dinner with my brother and my nephew. Then I came home and here I am. Also, I watched a lot of Demon Slayer because for whatever reason, I'm watching anime again. And how?
Like, Arnell was legitimately in a situation that called for
a serious wrestling competition. I'd also like to point out that, like, the pickling machine Brian Cage was right there.
And oh, God. Brian really, Cage.
I'm disappointed that no one.
Oh.
The pickling, no, you need to finish that. But what the pickling machine, Brian Cage.
Yeah,
there's a wrestler named Brian Cage.
Who is if the, you just switch it to Brian?
Oh, it could have been Brian Cage.
Yeah. Or Brian
Cage.
Brian Pillman, like the, you know, possibilities are in. Yeah. Brian Dillman, fuck.
Brian Dillman, that. Son of
a. Oh, son of. God damn it.
We could have pickled all over this bad boy. It would have been a blast.
All right, you got to call your friends and be like, listen, we had some.
We got to re-record it. We got to redo this whole thing.
We got some late ideas coming in. I think you should listen to them.
I'm the pickler now. I'm the pickler now. It's that simple.
Are either of you guys going to a BitGen this weekend?
I will be there. I'm going to be in Lake Nilray Caverns area, leaving on Tuesday, but I will be driving back north on Saturday.
Nice.
And I'll stop at BitGen, and I'm going to be going to get dinner and then driving back to Delaware.
I'm still trying to figure out if I can make BitGen happen. I could possibly use the vehicle to go if Ashley will let me. I don't see why she wouldn't, because I'm pretty sure she's off, so whatever. My issue is I don't have anywhere to stay down there.
And that is the challenge right there, because for me, I look, I generally have either a friend that will let me crash with them, or I'll just go all in and just drive straight back home afterwards.
Yeah, it'd be like a 4 or 5 hour drive for me. I couldn't just do the drive back after the show.
Oh, no, I know you couldn't do that. I'm just saying, like, that's the challenge for you to go, is that kind of thing, because that's how I'd make it work. But, I mean, surely somebody down there, you got to know somebody down there. Heck, Adam, at least. Even if you don't go straight home, how far is it to Adam's house?
I have no clue.
From Baltimore, it's like an hour.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, that's the same distance I would drive to get home.
And hit him up, see.
Yeah,
I don't like to impose myself on other people.
Well, I mean, I don't know how to tell you this, but you kind of have a choice if you want to crash at someone's house. No, that's just how it works.
Besides, fair is fair. You know, you let other people crash at your house. You know, it's like, you know, you're totally going to let me crash at your house literally
the next weekend.
Well, there you go. It's familiar territory. Do it up. If he says no, so be it. It's no harm, no foul. If he says yes, you're staying. If he says no, you're not.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I want to go. I want to see Grant. I want to see House the Great. I want to see friends. I miss it.
I think you know what you need to do. I think you know what.
Sell my body on the corner and get money.
Yep, that's it. Now you're talking. Get that.
Yeah, buddy.
Nah, but I can't imagine. I'm pretty sure. I mean, generally people were like, okay, at least at worst case scenario, give you like floor space or couch space or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think we were all a little quick to both bring up and encourage Joe to prostitute himself for a crash space with BitGen. I just want to point that out.
I didn't bring it up.
No such thing as too quick.
It seemed like we jumped on that a little too fast.
No.
No, we didn't jump on it fast enough.
Touche. Fair enough.
But I'll do honestly, like, yeah, people, I'm pretty sure you could find somebody that lets you crash with them down there. Heck, even if it was one case, you could do even somebody's got a hotel, like, hey, if you got room, I can drop it out like an extra coin or two. I can get a roller to come in there and just sleep in like in the corner of the room. I don't know. Yeah. I've done that before.
I don't know who's getting hotels or who's just crashing with friends. And like, I don't know the friends of that area as well as like other people do. So
make
I don't
a blanket Facebook post, general Facebook post. Anybody got a spot? Again, worst case scenario, you don't get an answer. No harm, no foul.
That's a good idea. I'll do that.
I mean, I'm Hail Marying shit left and right on Facebook. Anybody got options for a job? just whatever. Shoot. That's what the thing is actually for, is to get friends to actually help you with things and to keep in touch.
I do want to go down there, though. Like, I miss hanging out with friends. I know our friend Brendan, he wants me to visit his museum down there. I was there like 2 years ago. It's a really, really cool museum. If anyone's in the Baltimore area, called the Bloop Museum. It's like,
I promise. He'll always be like, hey, come on down for this thing. I'm like, let's plan a thing for that. But what usually ends up happening is like, I got a whole schedule plan. He's like, can you come here too? I'm like, I'm already booked up. That's the point. You have to reach out to plan a time, and then you become the reason I make the trip. Like, and I've always suggested things like, just have a small thing there. Just have like a day where it's like the Bloop inaugural day. I don't freaking know. Just a day where
you're moving the museum soon, actually.
Yeah, I've heard rumors of that. He posted about it. We'll see what he does. But,
yeah.
I mean, just like he said, the 20,000 square feet or whatnot, that's another challenge of moving the museum. Someone's got to be willing to house it.
Indeed. Hopefully he finds a home for it. It's really cool. I can only imagine how big it's gotten in the 2 years since I've been there. Oh, he's got some old shit, like early computer systems.
Small world stuff where someone I didn't know knew him. Actually donated stuff to the museum. I was like, wait a minute, you know Brennan? She's like, yeah, I donated to his museum. I'm like, ain't that some shit? Small world.
It is a small world.
After all.
Anyway, anything anyone else want to talk about, or should we dive into reviews?
Zuppa Toscana.
Deadpool was great.
I think everyone wants to talk about Olive Garden. We just want to review Olive Garden.
This episode brought to you by Olive Garden. When you're here, you're family.
But don't go to the wrong Olive Garden. That was when you're here, you're delicious. And that's a problem.
SML, when you're here, you're in trouble. You made a wrong turn somewhere.
When you're here, you're a estranged family.
Instead of Olive Garden, this is the Sausage Garden.
Hell yeah.
Well, there's the show title, Sausage Garden. Write there that down.
Our Savage Garden cover band.
That's something I need to go see. Apparently, I've heard people claim that Deadpool is the reason why Borderlands didn't do well. I was like, I don't think that's how this
works. No, I think Borderlands is the reason Borderlands didn't do well.
That is
Borderlands, and I agree.
That is a diss. That's tea, and I'm sipping.
Don't put any rock salt in that tea.
That's a good, even better that you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've seen more than a few people make that statement, which drives me crazy, by the way. They'll be like you see how Borderlands is doing across the board, and the response is, well, I'm going to go see it anyway, because I don't trust these reviews. I got to know for myself. I'm like, man, this poison sure is poisonous. I ain't trusting that shit. Those reviews don't mean nothing. I got to know it's poison for myself. Like, I'm sorry. When you got single digits on the audience and critic scores, I don't need to verify shit. I'm keeping my money. It is that simple.
Yeah, I have people I trust that have seen it, and I'll watch it eventually just to know, but I'm not going to pay for it in theaters.
Yeah. You know someone who is going to pay for it in theaters?
Hmm.
Our friend Jacob.
Don't tell me he's doing that shit. I'm going to just.
No, he found IMAX tickets for $5.
That's right.
So he's taking his family to go see it in IMAX.
He's the reason why they made it PG. At least there's that thing there. Yeah. At least, well,
actually, he might not be taking his kids. He's very protective of what his kids watch. So it's possible it's just going to be him.
Well, let them know it's okay because they stupidly made it PG.
So it's PG-13, so there is some violence. And
They might swear once.
There's violence and maybe someone smokes a cigarette. Which
makes the movie
PG-13 now.
Yeah.
No, he's really strict on what he allows his kids to watch. So thinking about it, it's probably just going to be him going in IMAX himself. Maybe a date with his wife. Yeah, not the kids. I don't see him bringing his kids to that.
Man, he could go see anything better. Whew. But hey, well, I mean,
he's taking the bullet for the team. He says he wants to review it on Thursday. I'm like, listen, man, we have a lot of shit to do on Thursday. He's like, we need more movie reviews on the show. I'm like, technically, a video game podcast doesn't need any movie reviews.
I was about to say, need is a strong word to use for that.
Yeah. So we'll find out more about Deadpool on Thursday.
All right. So.
Wait a minute. You're reviewing Deadpool now?
No.
Apparently.
Did I say Deadpool?
You did.
You did say Deadpool.
You did say Deadpool.
We'll find out more about Borderlands on Thursday.
There you go.
I don't want to hear about Deadpool because I still want to see Deadpool.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why I'm saying it's on my mind. Ashley and I were supposed to go this week, and it never happened. So
eventually, this week,
I'm really curious as to how the IMAX experience will affect Jacob's review of Borderlands. In that, like, getting a complete, fully sensory experience of a shitty movie has got to be like way more agonizing than just seeing and hearing it. Like, if you're fully immersed in a movie that fucking sucks. like body and soul committed. That's a lot. I wouldn't bring my fucking kids to that either if I had any.
In 4D.
I assume like Jacob doesn't seats. Let his kids listen to this show, even though
he's let his kids be on the show.
I assume he kept the gaping butthole talk to him.
Yeah, there was no gaping butthole talk during.
All right. They don't know about.
I thought you loved me. I thought I.
They don't
loved
know
you
about. They don't know about the button, do they? Are they listening now? Jacob's no. Kids, turn off the podcast if you're listening now. Leave girl. This in. Don't cut it out. This is important.
Now, the look, sad thing is I got rid of that clip so we could fit more wrestling clips on the soundboard.
Oh, son of a bitch. Well, yeah. Nah, that's fine. Actually, we do have a button. We have a button for that one. Hold on. Roll that back. We got rid of that. Say we got rid of that button again, Joe.
We got rid of that button.
Oh, son of a bitch.
There we go. That feels complete.
There we go.
Well, son of a bitch indeed.
Yeah, it was either that one or...
Listen here, fuck snort.
And Aki really likes that one, so I kept that one.
Yeah, that is a pretty good one.
Plus, it's Norg, and when you get Norg on the show, that's always good, right?
Fucking yeah! Mm-hmm. Hey,
well, that's a really good way to like get Purnell to
agree about anything
when he's not here.
It's like Purnell agreed. Aren't you excited, Jacob?
Yay!
That's my new favorite one too. So,
hey, Purnell, do you want to donate your body and brain to science while you're still alive?
Fucking yeah! Fucking
no. Awesome! I'll get the paper. Drink this weird blue liquid and follow me, Purnell.
Fuck no!
Not yet. He's got reviews first. Not yet. He's got reviews first.
Hold on.
Afterwards, he can die Purnell, all he wants. I don't give a shit.
Purnell, as he so often does, raises a very good point. You have to record a fucking no clip to go fucking yeah. Please, we have to make this happen.
All right, Purnell, give us a fucking no.
Fuck no. That's so fucking stupid.
Art. This is art.
Oh, man.
SML art
with us.
Well, yeah, a lot. I mean, we're at least two of us are in middle age and we're podcasting after 10 o'clock at night, so.
Yeah, I should be going to bed soon.
Buckle in, audience. It's only going to get worse and less coherent from here.
Once the sodium kicks in.
Oh, God, yeah. Once we all go into fucking sodium comas, that's going to be real fun.
I mean, I had a lot of mozzarella sticks from Burger King earlier, so my sodium levels are pretty up there, too.
Yeah, I'm watching the video. I'm watching the Twitch stream now, and I'm waiting for like smoke to start billowing out from behind your earphones.
No, that's just because I'm really stoned too. No, I'm joking.
Oh, well,
Joe, this is a professional podcast, sir.
Yeah, sure.
I am higher than giraffe pussy.
Good. I'm glad you got my emphysema laugh in there too. That's very good. Really glad that's been immortalized forever.
Yep. That's good old soundboard.
That's fine.
Good soundiest.
I'm glad. No, I'm actually kind of, in a way, glad I said something stupid enough to be to warrant inclusion on the soundboard.
And it's going to be on the podcast.
For life.
Hell yeah. It's a green
bag. Yeah, reviews. Let's get to these. We got a handful of games to talk about tonight. Let's start things off with Skelethrone, The Chronicles of Arakona, developed by 70 Strike, published by Valkyrie Initiative, released August 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Skelethrone is a challenging 2D action platformer with RPG elements inspired by games like Castlevania and Dark Souls. Purnell, what is going on in Skelethrone?
Skeletron, you are a undead warrior, or rather, you're an undead warrior, but you are an undead warrior that has maintained their ability to process, emotions and thoughts, and that makes you special in this wild and crazy Dark Souls-inspired world. So, as a result, you are now tasked with exploring this world and figuring out what your purpose is, even, like, what you're doing here and how to either resolve the world's fate or even just figure out why it's the way it is. But You'll be doing this by way of 2D platforming hack and slash action. You'll be exploring a 2D map or 2D world with a interconnected map, series of, you know, unique zones, or I don't want to say unique in that sense, but they're all different from each other, basically. Different zones. And you'll be obtaining different abilities as you progress, a la Metroidvania format. I appreciate that you get the double jump fairly early, because why the hell not? You have properties that are similar to the Soul series by way of, like, you know, different weapons that are associated with different requirements to your stats in order to wield them. And you have a weight limit on the equipment you can hold. Accessories, weapons, helmets, shields, armor, you know, boots of the works. You know what I'm talking about. The good stuff, really. The typical equipment suite. There's also a sort of grid that you can use, that they call it knowledge in this game, that you can use to buff up various stats if you find shards hidden throughout the map that can be applied to this bad boy. None of them are applied to really particularly skills or anything. That's usually related to just stats themselves, whether it be like health or ether. Ether being the means that for you to use your special weapons, I mean, so to speak, like for you to use like your special special attacks. Because every weapon you equip also comes with 1 to 2 special abilities. Sometimes the special ability doesn't cost any ether, and other times they do. They all have cooldowns, though, so you can't just kind of spam them into oblivion. The funny thing I've noticed about this game, though, is that the mobs, and even being a 2D game, can be pretty jerky. You might find yourself feeling like you might have it down when you fight one monster with claws. You might have its pattern down, but then you'll come across a room where like 5 of them jump you at once. And you're hoping for dear life, you can kind of cluster them together to use your special attack to damage them all simultaneously, you know, just to make your life a little easier. But ultimately, it can get pretty tough. The game's fairly lenient, though, in regards to your deaths. It does the usual: when you die, you lose your currency. Currency being the points you use to upgrade yourself at level up bonfires. Yeah, because those are here too. But unlike Dark Souls and the like, there is no living and dead phase in that regard. It's just basically when you die, and you go back and pick up your stuff. But you don't have to worry about like being a human and having the difference between being a human versus not, all that nonsense. So for the most part, the game is enjoyable. It doesn't do anything out of the ordinary, per se. Not that it needs to, but you still should mention it when you're dealing with, you know, game reviews. But I do feel like the game still feels fine. I wish it weren't so stiff in movement, but I guess that's just a staple of the genre too. Everything has to be stiff. It's almost like a Playboy was involved in the making of this game. I don't know. But anyway. Shut up, Bob. Dad joke. Where's Jacob? Anyway. So, I mean, with that said, though, the game did start out kind of being like kind of mad to me, because it was like more of this with the flow, more of the same, you know what I mean? But as I played more into it, I started to appreciate more of it, too. It does feel fine. It's a good game. I enjoy playing it. I do feel like I was working more with using shields and the distance attack weaponry, because you do get bows and arrows and stuff, too. But I kind of quickly was like, I'm just going to stick with the shield and melee weapon, leave it as it is. But I found the game to be pretty entertaining. Again, nothing exemplary per se, but fun enough where if you're looking for a 2D action platformer, but with Metroidvania elements, I think you can go worse than this. And listen, you'll find a good time with it if you feel like $15 is your sweet spot. I think that's the MSRP for it too.
Yep, it is $14.99, your official verdict on Skelethrone, The Chronicles of Arakona.
I'll give it a try.
Yay!
No.
You wanted the clip. I got the clip for you. any final thoughts on the game?
No, I'd say just get all up in there. Get up on this.
Get up on in that. All right. Next game to talk about, Minds Beneath Us. Developed and published by Barebone Studio, released July 31st on Steam for $19.99. Embark on a thrilling sci-fi journey in a futuristic Asian city and minds beneath us. In a society fully automated by advanced AI, you're ensnared within a foreign body accompanied by its original owner's subconscious. To together face impending challenges and confront an uncertain destiny. Dave, tell us about your time with Minds Beneath Us.
I will, but first I want to welcome the listeners back to SML, the Sodium Meal Lovers Podcast. Take us with a grain of salt. Sweet listener, I'm here to talk about Minds Beneath Us. Listen, I'm here to do something serious. I need everyone to pay attention to me because I have scholarly work to embark upon here on this program.
Sodium meal lovers. Oh.
You heard me. Anyway, we can talk about sodium another time, literally any time, because that is the new dedication of this podcast. But for now, I am here to talk about Minds Beneath Us.
So damn funny.
Hey, there it is. Keep that in. Don't edit that out. Minds Beneath Us is a cyberpunk game, but not in the usual way, where a man uses his internet skills to overthrow the government. There are no typing montages here, and best of all, no EDM. Instead, yay, this is a game about how much work fucking sucks. It is a game about shitty jobs, and at this, it excels. You play as MBU, an artificial consciousness that can be installed into people's bodies, often against its own will, to control them for short, simple tasks and assignments, often implied to be either spycraft of some caliber or straight-up assassinations. After a tutorial stage where the controls and gameplay are demonstrated, you are cast into the body of Jason Dye, which I hope I'm pronouncing correctly, which is something I'm probably going to be saying a lot over the course of this review. Jason Dye is a man working the night shift at a flop farm, which in the game is a type of energy plant that uses the computing power of human brains, belonging to and provided by desperate people living in slums, to keep the city's AI-driven municipal functions operating. You find this out really early in the game, so I don't really consider it. You, as Jason, work the night shift. It sucks. You're only doing it because you don't want your very chipper and ambitious girlfriend, Fran, to support you without you doing anything. Your coworkers either hide from the reality of what they do with good vibes and petty office drama, or they are too tired and cynical to acknowledge it. Meanwhile, the company itself claims that what it's doing is a moral good, providing steady work for the displaced and impoverished, which company management earnestly believes. The world of this game, and the details I've just described, are a big part of this game's selling point because the world's very well developed. World building details and lore are conveyed not just through dialogue, but through overheard NPC conversations, news programs you can watch if you want to, and other indirect means that spare the player from really, really long prairies of exposition, which I very much appreciated. It's sort of a pitfall of games like this. It's not an open world exactly, but it is a busy one. There are multiple layers of animation going on in pretty much every location in the game, and they're all kind of going on at once to suggest both depth and urgency, which I thought was really cool. It does feel like you're in a city where other things are happening beyond the game's focus on this one guy and the pseudo-military independent consciousness sharing his body with him, which I think is really cool. Gameplay-wise, controls are pretty simple. It's A and D to move left and right. This is a very side-scrollery kind of game, so that's really the only two directions you need. You press E to interact with things, and you use the mouse button to select dialogue options. This last item is very important because dialogue not only provides, you know, the usual information and world building that you always have in games like this, it gives the player some agency into choosing Jason's personality and temperament. He can be polite. He can be empathetic. He can be hostile. He can be just quiet and non-reactive because there is always an option for you to just not say anything when people talk to you. Or you can just be overworked and unengaged. Barebones Studio, who made this game, describes it as an emotional sci-fi narrative game, which is true, but I feel like it undersells what has been a very rich and immersive gaming experience thus far. I haven't beaten it yet, full disclosure. I also don't know how long the game is, but I intend to find out. I admire the scale of this game very much, especially given its relatively sort of humble and limited focus and protagonist. And I also really like, probably because I'm a pessimist at heart, I like how the world in the game both mirrors how shitty life in 2024 could be and also offers a more developed version of how it might suck in a few decades' time. it's a really hard line to walk, and they're doing a very good job of it. So, in conclusion, thumbs up, no war but class war, kill the body and the head will die, etc. All hail sodium, teacher, mother, secret lover.
Very good.
Yes, indeed.
Well, the game clocks in at $20. What are your thoughts on Minds Beneath Us?
It's actually on sale. I just looked at it on Steam shortly before I hopped on here, and it's like 10% off, so it's like $17.
Yeah, $17.99 until the 14th, but I think the show's going to be out that day, so people will probably miss out on it if they're listening to the MP3 of this.
Very good. Well, if you're in the chat now, definitely buy it when it's on sale. If you're listening to this several days later, due to the time dilation that eventually comes for us all, because time is a cube and Gene Ray was a prophet. yes, he was, goddammit. He is a prophet whose works must be studied by the righteous man if he is to achieve enlightenment. That said, $20 is absolutely a fair price for this game. It is very good.
All right, sounds good. Dave, that is it for you. Thank you, as always, for coming on, hanging out with us.
Hell yeah, this was fun.
Yeah, we love having you on. We'll have to get you back on again soon. For now, do you have any final words before we let you go?
All hail sodium.
Very good.
Precious sodium.
Precious, life-stealing sodium.
We can't let a single crumb go to waste. I will retain water until I am a fat, glorious god among men.
Oh, Lord.
Just a big, pillowy dynamo.
You've got problems, Dave, but we love having you here.
Yeah, a lot of them are sodium-related.
All right.
I'm sure the high blood pressure is coincidental. Anyway, good night, everyone.
Have a good night.
I have to leave. Good night.
Well, his heart gave out. Next game to talk about is Cat's Request, developed and published by Sometimes You, released August 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $9.99. Cat's Request is a fantastic Cat's Request is a fantastic detective story about an extraterrestrial cat named Ash and his virtual assistant living in a metropolis governed by artificial intelligence. Bree, what is Cat's Request?
So, yeah, you just summed up a good amount of it. It's a point
and click. All right, it's $10. What do you think? No.
It's a point-and-click detective story about Ash, a humanoid cat living in a futuristic world. There's robots everywhere. The city is largely run by AI. And we wake up, and even though we don't want to, and our AI is like, no, I'll turn on the TV. And then, according to the news, there's this malicious virus that's affecting the AI. And it's been mandated that non-bodied AI, these incorporeal ones, be shut down. And it just so happens that our companion, Root, is one such AI. So we've got to find a body for Root. But bodies are expensive. So we got to go out and find a job and make like 40,000 credits for the base model. Or find some other method of getting a body. And so we go off to the body shop to find out what we need to do. And we find out that someone has started an illegal consciousness transfer on the shop's owner and incapacitated them. And so if we want to get a body, we not only need to get money, but we need to solve this mystery of who has done this to the body shop owner. And totally new way to say body shop and mean something different, but yeah. So there are certain things you can't interact with, but your AI root can. And as an AI, she can do things like interact with the consciousness of others to solve puzzles and manipulate things. So she can unlock things for you too, but you may have to treat her to her favorite digital candy first. They're like little flash drives that count as candy. It's a cute concept. Pretty much every suspect in the game can have their consciousness hacked, and you solve these little surreal puzzles to get the key to unlock their mind and get the big clue to who as to who to talk to next, or a piece of the story that will lead us to the ultimate villain. And along the way, maybe we find out who's behind this AI virus in the first place and save the day. You'll need to manage Ash, his mental health also, while you're doing all of this with different foods. In order to get through the doors to certain buildings, you need to have good mental health, and they can tell by scanning you. So you can eat a lot of food, you can do some good deeds like water the plants. Also, doing deeds and helping others is the best way to find clues and navigate the storylines, and also to get achievements, if that's the thing you care about.
I mean, if they're listening to this show, they probably care about achievements.
Yeah, probably. But
the easy ones in this game?
Pretty easy, yeah, I would say. The art is pretty. The game has a nice color palette. The inhabitants of this futuristic world are anthropomorphic animals, many of them cats. But there's some like bunnies and dogs and stuff too. So it's you know, got some good variety there. There's some pretty fantastical locations and other planets and underwater, and it's a pretty interesting world without being too unfamiliar. The music is perfectly futuristic and alien to set the mood. There's like this one jukebox or whatever you want to call it in the futuristic club, and there's a jam there, man. It's some alien funky music. It's good stuff. And but yeah, the cursor moved a tad slow for my liking, but that was only a mild irritation. It took me way too long to realize I could run by toggling X. There wasn't much of a tutorial presented, but there was a help section in the journal. So everything you needed to know beyond the normal this is a point and click adventure was in the journal, which was nice. All in all, it was a fairly short experience, but I had a good time with it.
Cool. Is it worth $10?
I would say if you like point-and-click adventures, yes, it is.
Well, then here's the big question, because it's a sometimes you game. Stax. $10 on all platforms on Xbox One, $10 on Series X and S, $10 on Windows. Should people get multiples? Should people just get one? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, if you want the deal, you buy the Xbox One version, and then you get the half off of the other versions, which is like totally... I don't think
it includes the Windows, does it?
I think it does now. I think it does. So, I could be wrong, but my understanding is that it's just you get half off the other versions. So, interesting. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if you like the achievements and the stacks, it's a pretty easy one once you've completed the story. It's not got like a ton of replay value because there's the same villain every time. But it's pretty easy achievements. And for $20, essentially, you could get like, you know, three of the same game and you're good to go. So, yeah.
You are right. Xbox Series X and S version gets 50% discount for owners of Xbox One. Microsoft Store gets 50% discount for owners of Xbox One. And PS5 gets 50% discount on owners of PS4.
Yeah.
So, again, if you want the discounts, start with the Xbox One or the PS4 and go from there.
Yeah.
And I believe you pre-order Cat's Request, you could save 20% as well.
Pre-orderable
for a few more days, I believe.
For a few more days, all right. Well, there you go.
So if you're in chat now, you could take advantage of that. If you're not in chat now and you're listening to this after the fact, sucks for you.
Well, there you go.
There you go. All right, one last game to talk about: Rogue Rollout. A preview of this, developed and published by Peapod Inc. It's releasing November 11th on Steam for $9.99. So we're taking an early look at this. Rogue Rollout is a thrilling roguelike deck builder where you score points in a Yahtzee-style dice game, choose powerful artifacts, face challenging obstacles as you push through endless rounds. Renell, give us a quick rundown. What is Rogue Rollout?
Do you like Yahtzee?
Yes.
Do you like Blotro?
I haven't played that one yet, but everyone talks highly of first it, and so foremost, yes.
You need to play Blotro. But after that, so I might be being a little unfair when I say comparing it to Blotro, because it doesn't have the same method for how it applies its buffs and debuffs, but I'm only using it because it just seems to be the way things are going. But I'll describe the game proper too. So the idea is this is Yahtzee, but it has a bit of when I say Blotro, like the fact that the game requires you to hit certain score thresholds as you play the game. So when you start, the game's primary goal is for you to clear 42 rounds of it, and you'll be given 5 dice. At the beginning of round one, you'll choose an artifact. Artifacts in this game are the modifiers that will make your run in the game a fair bit easier. They generally do great things for you, such as provide a die with a multiplier or increase the cap of a score for an item or for a specific type of roll you do. But either way, you'll choose one. And then the game begins in earnest. You take your 5 dice and you get to roll them 3 times. Each roll, the game allows you to lock in a die if you feel as though it's going to contribute towards something you want to shoot for. What is something, you ask? Well, a variety of different ways to score points, whether it's the number of 1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, or 6s you have on your die faces by the time you're done rolling, or matching, or 3 matching, 4 matching, 5 matching, baby straight, which is 4 die that go in sequence. Now, they don't have to be like directly one after another on the die, like on the screen, just as long as the die themselves can count up or down, rather. And large straight is every die is a sequence. It makes it up for one massive sequence. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 versus 2, 3, 4, 5. So
thanks.
Full house is when you have Danny, Jesse, Uncle Joey, Michelle, and Stephanie, but not DJ in sequence. Okay. But also it's when you get 3 matching and 2 matching of a different number. And then something else they add here, which is also probably in Yahtzee, but I don't remember it. If anything goes, where for one roll on a round, you can just take the face value of all of your dice and just say, I want those points.
Oh, yeah, that's in Yahtzee. It's like a junk roll. They have one spot for that.
Now, here's something. Is this in Yahtzee? So there's something called the bonus, and you don't actually roll the bonus. But what it is it's a set number of points that incrementally increases after each round. But the only way you can get the points is by getting the 1s through 6s scores to equate to 60 or greater. If you can pull that off, well, then guess what? You will get whatever's locked in that bonus slot. And sometimes that could be the difference between you winning a round and losing a round. So if you find yourself getting some high rolls or high numbered rolls, like a bunch of 6s, it might be a good time to claim that one just so you can fill the slot for it.
There is a bonus in Yahtzee, but it's a fixed bonus. It doesn't grow as you get more of them, but there is just a fixed one. If you get over so many points in the 1 to 6 areas, you get a bonus at the bottom.
Oh, okay. In that case,
how do I remember this shit? I haven't played Yahtzee in, oh my god.
The important part is you remembered it and I didn't, which means you just saved my bacon. Thank you. So with that said, the way this game does it then is that after every 3 rolls, you have all. Keep in mind, I'm pretty sure I'm describing the rules of Yahtzee. But anyway, after 3 rolls, you have to have made it such you can score at least one of the unclaimed scoring options you have remaining. If you find yourself in a situation where you can't, well, that's game over, or rather round over. And when the round ends, if you have not beaten the required score, game over. But if you do beat the required score, you'll move on to the next round and get to try again. However, unlike a lot of games that do this whole mechanic, it seems like every even number round, the game gives you a cursed artifact. Cursed artifacts suck. They always do bad things. You can't avoid taking them, and they make your runs frustrating. For example, there's one that I really hate called El Diablo, where if you claim a bonus with 3 6s in it,
it counts for 0 points, just flat out. Ouch. The bonus is 0 points. So it stings. But this is pretty much the game's formula. Every time you finish an odd number, or sorry, an even number round, you'll get a positive artifact. Every time you finish an odd number round, you'll get a cursed artifact. And they'll just stack and stack and stack. And the required score will get higher and higher and higher. And the bonus will get higher and higher and higher. And eventually, either you're going to reach round 42 or you're going to fail. I haven't reached round 42. but the highest I have gotten was like 37, and I was proud of that crap.
Very nice. But,
so next time you go back, you can try again. There are also modifiers to make the game harder if you so desire to do so. I haven't beaten round 42, so I have not desired, so I haven't even messed with them, so don't even ask me about them. But I do think the game is in its own way pretty fun, because there's a reason why Yahtzee sold well. And quite frankly, when the game is actually running, it is fun to see how well you can do. And you do get like, oh man, if I could just get the this other number, I can get the full house, and I get a good 5x bonus on full houses. This is fantastic. Come on, come on, come on. And it's like, great. Like, I remember I had one setup where the first bonus I claim in a round is multiplied by like 8. And then in addition to that, I had 2 dice that each had multiplier faces on them, and they both came up on that first run. And I pulled the full house, which had a bonus multiplier. So I think in one roll, I got like 600 points. And I was like, yeah, this is feeling good. So I do think the game is fun. I mean, make no mistake about it. I enjoyed it. Again, I mean, I'm pretty sure, like I said, it is Yahtzee with extra steps.
Yeah.
But I like Yahtzee, and I like this. So it's not a big deal.
Yeah, sounds cool as hell, really. I love Yahtzee, so I'm down to give it a go. But it comes out in November, so we'll take another look at this closer to release. For now, should people wish list it? Should people keep their eye on it? What should people do with this one?
I think it's worth wish listing, because I am enjoying it now. So at the right price point, it could be an easy buy recommended. And who's to say they're not going to add stuff that's going to make the game even better? So
yeah. Well, when it releases, it's going to be $10. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, I would buy this for $10 and putz around with it. But again, I hope they add more.
Very cool. All right. Well, that is it for us. We're going to take a little break. I should be back with Chris, I believe, doing another review or two with him. But for now, we're going to take a little musical interlude. I'm going to play something from good old Gitaru Man. And then we'll be back with more. So does Bree, we'll give you final words. Do you have any final words before we wrap this up?
Stay salty, my friends.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. We got more show to take care of. Chris Taylor's here. Chris, how are you doing?
It's me.
Yay.
I'm fine. Just flew back in from California, where I was playing a show as a replacement returner.
And boy, are your arms tired.
It's true, because my bass is slightly heavy.
Yeah, gotta carry that.
Oh, it's literally true. That's not a good joke.
How was the trip? Tell us all how it went. How was the performance? I caught part of it on stream. It was awesome that Lauren the Flute was streaming it on her Twitch channel. I caught a lot of the event. Not as much as I wanted because other shit came up and I got distracted. But like, yeah. Ro was awesome. The Two Turtle Trio duo, or was it?
I can't
remember the name of it.
I think it was called Double Turtle Duo.
They were really good.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom
really
was
funny
visiting, so she loved it too.
I was gonna say, so you had no time to learn the turtle names.
No.
Let's see. Was it Double Turtle? I don't know. I don't know how to find things I recently followed on Instagram, so I'm gonna have to abandon it there. How do I find what? Wait a minute. Two Turtles Duo is what it's called. So yeah, that's a band that was there. Okay, so well, from the beginning, I got invited by Lauren and of course, as you may or may not know, if you're like a real Austin, Texas area VGM head, which you might be, I don't know. There are dozens of us. Then the returners who started in Austin about, you know, over 10 years ago, the members of that group that are not Lauren the Flute are also in Super High Tops with me. So if you took all but the bass player of the returners and then replaced Lauren with me, you would have Super High Tops. So I don't know how to make that less complicated. I can make it more complicated. A lot of shared members. Primarily three shared members. And I'm not going to say that made it a natural that I would be asked to fill in for their bassist, their very busy bassist, Danger. But I was asked, and I learned the set over about a month or so, and flew out to California and got to hang out with Kirby's Dream Band, who of whom their keyboardist and bright colorful guy Ian Lucky was kind enough to host us, and like I said, he also is one of the driving factors of this show, which is called Brew Game Plus.
I love the name of that.
Yeah, Brew Game Plus is great, and this is their sixth outing. And they decided to, because it was the number six, they wanted to make the theme Final Fantasy VI. And so a lot of bands brought Final Fantasy VI material. And of course, The Returners is named after Final Fantasy VI. And that's like their biggest thing is like their, arguably their biggest thing, I guess. But they do a lot of Final Fantasy VI music. And so, yeah, we went over there. We played with... right before Kirby's Dream Band. Indeed, we did not only the original medley that's like their first thing that they did. They always open the show with the Final Fantasy VI medley. But the newer cover of the opera with the Woolsey English lyrics, not the remaster or Game Boy Advance, like lyrics that fit the English or that fit the meter better, but I don't think they're quite as good. It's like they really tried to force it to fit the meter, and so it sounds a little more awkward. But this one, she forced the words to fit into the meter, which they didn't really originally. And so we did that, and then we did a surprise cover of Dancing Mad Part 4, which is the final boss theme of the game, and quite a workout for those of us who play bass, which would be me. But yeah, it went over really well. We did a lot of stuff like that, and yeah, I met a lot of bands that are kind of more local to California, which is really nice, including the aforementioned Two Turtles Duo, which I had to read it again. Well, it's funny because it's actually a trio.
I know. I was great. Like, who's this third turtle? Like, what the hell's going on?
She was the bass player, and she was very nice. She complimented my actual bass a lot. You know, like, you know, bass players, we like to check out each other's gear. But then, you know, I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, somebody probably doesn't play a six string and is impressed by my shiny bass, which it is impressive. It was very expensive. But then I go to see their show. It's basically a jazz guitar duo with a bassist. And so it's very jazzy, but there's no like percussionist or anything like that. So I actually find that refreshing. I like to see bass players who work without a drummer, you know, see what they do. And she did awesome, but she also whipped out like this Rickenbacker that I'm like, that's as fancy as my bass. So I felt like it was more of a genuine remark, not like of any kind of like, oh wow, look at Mr. Expensive Fancy Pants over here. No, she actually also had a Fancy Pants bass. So I'm like, okay. So we both that's got so the fancy cool. pants on. Yeah. Kirby's Dream Band did amazingly. They also whipped out their very first Final Fantasy VI song. And once you hear it, it's exactly what you would expect from them. But they also had a few other surprises because they love to do surprises. I would definitely invite people to check out the VOD, which is still available on Lauren the Flute's channel. But also, secretly, we videoed the thing for real. And so there will be actual video at some point. But to tie actual you over...
audio? Like soundboard audio?
Not soundboard audio, but real audio from a actual good recorder. Nice. I think they might have captured soundboard audio too. They might be mixing that. I actually don't know. I know
the well, you get it, sneak it my way and I'll play it on the show.
yeah totally. Yeah, I mean, that was just like kind of a group effort. Like I have a Zoom recorder, so that's what I rigged up. And then Andre of Kirby's Dream Band had a nice fancy, really fancy actually, camera. And you know, obviously you can't stream with it, but you know, it's but he did record it. So yeah, I hope that comes out. That would be really cool because it was a very good performance, like I said, all around from everybody. And oh yeah, the opening band too was a really cool thing. I did forget the name of this one, but it's basically a it's like a steel drum like academy essentially. So you know, everybody except for like three people are playing steel drums, and it's like 30 people.
Wow.
Yeah, like they were setting up drums like in the audience, like they were just expanding way beyond the stage. They seem to want to take over the entire venue. But yeah, it was, and it's all ages. Like there were kids as young as like 6 years old out there playing, and also like, you know, much, much, much older guys. And so, yeah, it was like an all ages, all skill levels kind of thing where, you know, you had your guy with the keyboard who was like on the microphone kind of telling him now section A or now section B, you know, like kind of directing the thing. So it had that kind of like sitting in on like the coolest like percussion class ever type of vibe. But they did even some Final Fantasy VI music, too. So that was actually really cool. Anyway, yeah, great show. Then we flew back, like I said, and I had to work for 2 days, and now I get to move house. So it's we're right in the middle of the busiest month ever for me. So that's how I'm doing.
Damn.
So we got Pernell, how about
talking about games?
Brooke, how was your week? Oh, it's just me.
Yeah, anyway. Pernell was on earlier in the show, but if it makes you feel better, hey, Pernell, did you like the story?
Fucking yeah!
There we go.
But I thought I was supposed to... There we go. I thought, I was like, oh, am I not hearing the samples anymore like the olden days?
Oh, was it muted for you?
No, it wasn't once you hit the button, but I thought that you had played it because you sat there silently for 1 second.
Oh.
Fucking yeah!
But then you did play it, and I did hear it, so I was like, oh, there's a delay.
Might have been delayed.
Well, right on.
Anyway, should we talk about your game?
Yeah, let's do that. I did play a video game.
You did play a game for us, and I'm excited to hear about this one. It's called Signy, All Guns Blazing, developed by Keelworks, published by Konami. Released August 6th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $29.99. An unrelenting onslaught of eye-popping visuals, ear-bursting soundscapes, and mind-melting action makes Signy the vanguard for the next generation of shoot-em-ups. Outgunned, outmanned, and on your own, plunge into a sky full of hell in a last-ditch battle for survival. Chris, what is Signy, All Guns Blazing?
Okay, well, so this is, exciting enough, a Konami published shmup. You may remember Konami as being in the shmup game literally since the late 70s. You may know like the little games that they did, like, I don't know, Gradius.
Heard of that one.
Yeah, Scramble, Salamander, Axelay, Gyrus, the list goes on and on and on. Herodias. I'm just going to list all the games that they did, and then we'll call it there. Konami had been making all through the, like I said, from the very last bit of the 70s, they had a couple of games, but like mostly through the 80s and 90s, they had like a real foothold in the shmup business. I would say hadn't really heard a whole lot of from them since Gradius 5. Maybe there were a couple, but you know, like they don't come to mind at the moment. So this is exciting to see, because if Konami's putting their name on it, it's probably good. Although this is the actual developer of this is a first time out of the gate Scottish developer who
really,
yeah, apparently this is what I have been told.
Edinburgh, but, Scotland. That's cool.
Yeah. So not even a Japanese developer, really. This game really seems to have a lot of what would you say, moxie, a lot of ambition to kind of what they said is, I guess, be the vanguard for a new generation of shmups, which I take a little bit of umbrage with, because I mean shmups have not really slowed down lately. In fact, in the Switch era, they're bigger than ever. I would say that if they were putting this on Switch, that would be a laughable statement. But PS5 doesn't have a whole lot of exclusive shmups on it, so and this one
or
does,
Xbox for that matter,
or Xbox, exactly, especially Xbox, actually. So the whole thing about this game, ignoring the vanguard of the next evolution of shmups or whatever, is that it is technically very ambitious and looks amazing. It's got a great aesthetic that is. So normally with shmups, you like them to be nice and contrasty, you know, kind of bright and colorful. You want your guy to have like the orange shots, the enemy to have the purple shots or something like that, you know, in a cave shooter situation or something, so that you can do the everlasting, you know, the eternal bullet dance, that is to say, you know, tucking into those lines of bullets to take on the onslaught of enemies, things like that. And lots of games, even in the modern era, have done a lot of great moves to kind of master this. What I think Signy brings to it is a kind of cinematic and, like I said, kind of next generation level of this kind of a use of an old form, but to kind of do a new thing. So, yeah, basically, when you start the game, you're treated to an opening that makes you think it's going to be an entirely different kind of game. It's like it plays like this kind of. I'm going to say like, garage pop, like rock kind of song, while it, you know, shows this lady like getting ready to jump into her ship and stuff. You know, you've got pictures on the wall or on the desk or anything, you know, like little wordless storytelling kind of moments and such. You're like, okay, this is going to be all about this girl. Like that's what the game's going to be about. And, But then as the game progresses, you don't really find out much about her. I didn't even know her name until I started reading other material about the game. So turns out that's not the case at all. What it is it's a it's just kind of this general humanity rising up against giant robots on a planet that they had inhabited called Cygni. These robots thought, you know, were like thought to be dead. Like, are just powerless, but they still had some kind of, like, energy or resources attached to them that humanity kind of used to build up cities and things like that. But then the robots woke up, started attacking, and you as the pilot of a ship who barely gets a name gets to shoot them all down. But what I like about this one is that you very much feel like... part of a larger force, because as you fly through the game, you can actually watch like skirmishes below. Like you can see like the advancing, robotic alien army advancing on the good guys who have like, you know, a kind of distinct look to them, even though it's occurring way far in the distance. And you can even help them. Some segments of some stages allow for you to actually kind of interfere for essentially bonus points. But so your ship has a couple of different kinds of shots. It's kind of a hybrid of like some other stuff that that Konami even has done before. One is that so it's vertically scrolling, but it has the ability to tilt the gun to about a 30 degree angle on the left or right with the right stick, which kind of makes it a little bit twin stick shootery. But it's actually optional. You can get through the game just firing straight ahead, which means that it's feasible you could play this with an arcade stick, unless there's just a part I haven't gotten to where it's absolutely necessary to aim your gun. But they do lean into like the fact that you've got, you know, two sticks to work with here, not just the shooting straight ahead type of thing. Thankfully, though, it's not fully a twin stick shooter. That would completely change the game entirely. But you have, you know, like I said, your regular shot that shoots down other vertical things up in the air with you. Then with the other with the other shoulder button, you have the ability to drop bombs on the ground. And that will remind you very much of something like Twinbee. I think Xevious had that and like some other classic games of the genre will have the ability to shoot things on the ground. So the interesting thing is, though, that unlike a game like Darius, you actually can't do both at the same time. So it very much is more like Twinbee in this way that you can, or actually Dragon Spirit, which is one of my favorites. That's not a Konami game, but still. So you shoot the enemies that are straight ahead. You shoot the things that are on the ground. Like I said, you can even assist the other, you know, army that's on the ground by shooting at the oncoming alien hordes. And you kind of do so at the expense of your health, which is because the enemies up in the air never stop coming at you unless you're specifically fighting something on the ground. So, like I said, it acts more like a bonus system than anything. And speaking of bonuses, this game really relies heavily on the use of power-ups that you pick up throughout the stage. Now, normally power-ups increase your shot or maybe change the type of shot that you have. That's normally what we would see with power-ups. In this one, a power-up will refill a unit of energy, and this is actually where Cygni kind of stands out, is the way it uses energy. So your ship has six shield points and six kind of gun points, if you will, like gun levels, let's call it. And when your shield levels, when your gun level's at the maximum, your shooting is at the maximum. You do the most amount of damage. You have a little bit more of a spread. But the thing is, if you get hit, it takes away a shield point. Now, a shield point is automatically renewed by picking up a energy unit that enemies will pretty frequently drop until you get to points where they don't. But basically, that gives you effectively six shots until your ship blows up. However, you can use the shoulder bumper buttons to actually kind of redelegate your remaining energy to either your shields or your guns. So let's say you get hit three times, you're missing three shield units, you can then hit the L1 button to move units from your gun over to your shield. And then once you start picking up power-ups again, then your shield gets restored, and then you can use the R1 button to move those energy units back to your gun. By the same token, if you push the cross button, it'll do basically a little spread bomb that will really help you out to thin herds and stuff, but it's not like a screen clearing bomb. It's just, you know, and it's an upgradable kind of missile system, and the missile system will really help you take out like a crowd or whatever, but it's at the expense of one of your gun points. So if you use that a lot, then you need to and you want to keep up your gun level, then you're going to be draining your shield anyway just to use up all your firepower. So it's very strategic in that way. But like I said, in the normal course of the stages, you get a lot of energy drops, and it kind of becomes this thing where it's not strictly necessary to dodge every single bullet, because if you get hit and you get an energy power up, then no harm done. So, and boss fights actually have moments where they will drop energy things as well. So it's kind of like, because there is, it does have the bullet girth of a bullet hell in some places, depending on your difficulty, especially. It does become this kind of thing of like, it's less about dodging the bullets and more about finding the power-ups to fix the damage that seems pretty inevitable. I say this because the like enemies that come at you, like, you know, they basically swarm you, they all have bullets. They don't move in the same pattern every time, which is really key. They are aware of your ship, and so some enemies will fire like kind of more directly at you. And, you know, although bosses move in much more pattern-like things, like, they can kind of follow you around and chase you. Like, that's a difference between this and, like, a typical vertical shooter. You will inevitably, like, lose some energy points. Like, it's very hard to play a perfect game of this. So, yeah, like I said, it's all about managing that energy level. And the other thing is that any energy that you gain while everything's full, that is to say energy points that you're not using, get put into a bank, and then that is what you spend to upgrade your ship between stages. And this game also lets you replay any stage in order to kind of grind, if you will, some energy points to spend on, you know, like a few other upgrades. Not a whole lot of upgrades. This game is not super heavy on the upgrades, but you do have currency that you can spend on things, and so that will put you into like a system of potentially replaying levels and trying to do better. And the other thing I like about it is that something like a like there are mid bosses and such sometimes. Sometimes there are like bigger enemies that that, you know, you're starting to take them down and stuff, but then the stage just kind of moves past them. So if you actually want to defeat them, then it may require some higher firepower and another, you know, run through the level. There's one mid boss in particular in the first level that seems like it's the end boss, but it actually isn't. It's just the mid boss because it's so big and it has such a life bar that you're like, oh, this is the thing I got to take down. And then the stage is like, nah, you're moving past it. Time to go somewhere else. So it's really interesting, but yeah, like the story, none of this stuff really goes that far into depth. I would say that the best system this game has is that energy balancing system. But the upgrade system is a little bit like the storyline. It's like it starts to be like, oh, okay, this is going to be like a big thing here, and then it just ends up not being really. Like you don't even get access to the upgrades until you've beaten a certain story level. So you can't get ahead of this game in terms of power. So yeah, that's kind of how that goes. It's extremely good looking. Like the boss fights are just amazing. Like the scale of them is really incredible because you're kind of dealing with two levels here, and yeah, I really I like the action. It's nice and fast for a shmup that looks realistic, which is very rare. Usually you do suffer a lot from having a shmup with modern graphics. But like I said, the thing that, you know, kind of weakens it a little bit is like the amount of stuff it kind of goes for, but only goes about halfway for. So in that sense, it's like it is definitely pushing the genre boundaries a little bit, especially for players who aren't like so hardcore into shmups. I would actually say this is a really good one for them, but it's not really evolving into like some whole different thing or anything. It's just it's a very fancy, it's a fancy shmup and a very welcome one, but yeah, not the, it's not the next Gradius or anything.
Gotcha. Well, it clocks in at $29.99. What are your thoughts on that?
I think $29.99 is, that's about what you'd look at for like something that's new and modern and really good. And like I said, the production values are definitely here. Like some people worked real hard on these graphics. I mean, there's this one scene where your character is flying up to kind of the first stage, and you can see like these rain droplets on like the on the ship and everything, and like just the, it just looks so cool, and like it's, it is a good cinematic experience, and like I said, an interesting story, although, you know, not the most advanced story for like a shmup or anything, but this game is like really slick and really cool, and I would say it actually is a buy it at $29.99. I would say, yeah, this one's going to end up being something of a classic. It's just, like I said, it does have some systems that kind of keep it from being like a be all end all of the genre, but it's, I only say that because it seems to be claiming to be one. So yeah. I'm not, you know, in that sense, I disagree, but I think that from a different approach, it's a shmup that is beautiful and I think would really interest people who are less patient with the genre and would like something that they can actually survive. Although the levels are extremely long. So just to let you know, like you're looking at like 15 minute levels, like that's half a regular shmup's length. Yeah. So,
they're,
you know,
beefy levels.
Yeah, but in easy mode, you get multiple lives to get through them. And like I said, you get six hits before you die. So it's kind of like, it's not until the later levels that that really becomes insufficient. And by that time, you should have built up some skills. So yeah, it's a buy it.
Cool. All right. Well, I got one final game to talk about, and it's an email review. Do you mind if I read it quick?
Go ahead.
Cool. Final game is Bleak Faith Forsaken, developed by Archangel Studios, published by Perp Games, released August 6th on Series X and S and PS5 for $29.99. Explore the last remnants of civilization in this vast, unforgiving, and interconnected world. Learn what is left of its history. Discover pockets of natural life in the perpetually expanding omnistructure. Lose yourself in a journey unlike any other and find your purpose in the world. Our friend Horror Acolyte wrote in a review, this is what he's got to say.
Hold up, Joe. I feel your struggle. I'll take it from here. I got this. Just sit back, relax, twiddle your thumbs, whatever you need to do. Bleak Faith Forsaken, a review. Bleak Faith Forsaken is a third-person action-adventure RPG set in a grim world that fuses sci-fi and traditional medieval elements. Those familiar with the Souls-like genre will have a pretty good idea of what they're in for. The game starts out with a few lines of exposition informing the player that there is a crusade raging on at an imperial colony. At the heart of this colony is an anomaly being sectioned off by a rogue commander. But in the depths of this structure, things are rarely as they seem. A brief cutscene plays out with the player, an android-looking figure being attacked by another android that looks like a more robotic hunk from Resident Evil. You swiftly take a piece of metal and insert it into his skull, ending the encounter. Now you find yourself on a broken-down bridge-like structure, hovering above a bottomless void obscured by fog, a giant manta ray creature soaring through the air in the distance, weaving around stone columns and thick metallic wires. The architecture, a beautiful symbiosis of ancient and futuristic elements that tower above you in a landscape of dark, muted colors, save for the faint glow of a red light post. This opening segment sets a strong tone that lingers throughout most of the game, a lone character venturing into the unknown of a dark, desolate world. Now your journey begins as you search this enigmatic structure for tools to help you survive against its hostile residents, and hopefully some answers as to why you are here. Story elements in the game are told throughout logs, documents, interactions with a handful of NPCs, a very scarce number of cutscenes, and through the environment itself. Logs are interactable invisible spheres that can be found throughout the world. They can be easily located with a scanner ability that gives out a sonar-like pulse, pinging them in the surrounding areas. Documents are randomly dropped from enemies in no particular order. Some will be labeled as a set out of four, but you may acquire the last document in the set first. Unfortunately, your journey will be met with more questions than answers, but a few mysteries will have some light shed upon them. Early on, you'll learn of an ancient abandoned monastery in a desert. Despite it being subjected to large amounts of radiation, a religious faction known as the Sirdars have decided to occupy it at the behest of their leader, Yaroslav. Behind the monastery, the anomalous zone has spawned, a zone in which the laws of space and time seem not apply. A dangerous zone filled with mutated beings, all its inhabitants being influenced mentally and physically by its mysterious energy, while caught in a continuous loop of decay. Apparently, Yaroslav has performed some heretical actions and angered a higher power known as the God Emperor, who has sent his royal division, a military squad which you may or may not be a part of, to deal with the threat. Throughout this adventure, you will find the husks of many people frozen in place around the anomalous zone, sometimes alone or grouped together. Documents and lore items detailing an advanced society living repetitive lives locked in a never-ending slave-like cycle built around survival at the cost of a joyless and seemingly meaningless existence influenced by the hand of an invisible master. Bleak Faith uses a stamina-based combat system that has you weaving in and out of combat, slightly slower paced and methodical movements. There is a level of precision needed because of combo-related elements and the ability to use a perfect block. When attacking, a white hue can be seen around your weapon at certain points, indicating that if you press the attack button again, it will keep your attack chain going smoothly, making the attacks slightly quicker and dealing more damage. When enemies attack you, you have the option to block, which reduces damage taken while also decreasing stamina. But if you time your blocks perfectly, you can negate the damage altogether and reduce the stamina consumption of the block. This also allows for a quick counterattack that deals slightly increased damage. There are a variety of weapons to choose from, like swords, shields, hammers, bows, as well as staffs that let you conjure technomancy, the game's form of magic. This costs flux to use, which is essentially mana, represented by its own bar on the HUD. Each weapon deals a certain type of damage, either sharp, blunt, or technomancy. You can carry one primary and one secondary weapon set that can be instantly switched between during combat, giving you a bit of variety for damage types. Some weapons also give you access to special abilities that consume flux to use, like a lunge attack that has you slamming into the ground, dealing extra damage and stunning enemies, or static abilities like an increased chance to inflict debuffs on your foes with each attack. There are armor slots for all your typical armor pieces, each piece of armor having a rating for its defensive capability against each damage type. Alongside armor, you can also equip an amulet, ring, and cape that usually provide you with bonuses to health, stamina, flux, or character attributes, among other benefits. More on attributes in a moment. In various locations throughout the game, you will run into an NPC named the Handler, who acts as a blacksmith, allowing you to upgrade your weapons and armor up to 5 times each, with each upgrade increasing the damage or defensive stats of the item, while also adding a slot for an anomalous crystal to be inserted. Each anomalous crystal offers increases to item stats or character abilities or other enhancements like armor penetration or life leeching. The Handler only offers limited upgrading capabilities to start, but more can be attained as the game progresses. As you defeat foes, you will gain experience, helping to slowly increase your character's level. Each level increase gives you 2 attribute points that can be put into 1 of 4 attributes: strength, agility, intelligence, and constitution. Strength focusing on melee damage, agility on stamina amount, attack speed and movement speed, intelligence on flux amount and technomancy damage, and lastly, constitution on health and stagger resistance. Choosing which attributes to focus on is highly important for fine-tuning character builds. Once you kill the first story boss, you will gain access to a perk token, allowing you to choose between a variety of mastery options that will help provide a template for your character. There are 4 mastery slots available, with each mastery having the potential to be upgraded to improve its effects. Some examples of these include Vampirism, that gives you the drastic increase to leech life, or Technomancy, that greatly improves the penetration of your Technomancy attacks. The final area of character customization is abilities. You will be able to find ability splinters to fill 2 available ability slots. These abilities consume flux to use, and a majority of them also scale in their effectiveness depending on the level of specific character attributes. Some of these allow you to do an extended dash damaging foes as you pass through them, summon an elemental to fight alongside you, or create a magical armor that absorbs damage. Much like weapons and armor, you will also find plenty of consumable items around the map from fallen enemies, along with crafting components to make certain consumables. These include your standard potions to replenish health and flux, along with concoctions that give temporary boons to armor ratings or armor penetration. To start, you will only be able to craft the most basic items, but through exploration, you will find recipes for more potent elixirs. Your character has a consumable belt that will allow you to hotkey 4 consumables to it, allowing for limited amounts of each consumable to fit in the belt. While in combat, you only have access to consumables currently fixed to your belt, but once combat is over, the belt replenishes itself if you have more of the item in your inventory.
Side note, I have never had to say the word consumable or consumable in any sort of frequency compared to what you just heard. Apologies. Now on with the review.
This journey will have you visit many distorted locales, including vacant cityscapes, dark sewers, a foreboding asylum, and tranquil slums that echo with the sounds of constant rain. Each area offers new threats to deal with, like robotic skeletons, mutated scorpions, lumbering giants, and heretic cultists. The map is semi-open world, but has convergence points for story-related bosses. Certain sections will have you navigating maze-like layouts, disposing of enemies as you find pathways to new areas, or levers and ladders to connect areas you are currently in for better map access. You will also find homunculus in each area, gold-colored humanoid shapes that act as quick save and fast travel points to swiftly return to previously discovered map locations. Shortly into the game, you will also get a singular mirage homunculus that you can place around the world. This mirage acts as a respawn point on death and can be returned to your inventory upon visiting a regular homunculus. Placing these before certain boss fights can save you a good amount of travel time and having to deal with enemies that respawn after you die. Unlike traditional Souls-likes, death is not very punishing. You don't lose anything on death, and you only force a respawn of all the enemies on the map. Boss fights will have you dueling against all manner of enemies, armor-plated heretics, mutated banshees, or giant skeletal knights. Most boss fights are tough, but not overly punishing. Each boss has an extended health bar, some which trigger additional phases that give the boss access to new skills. With a bit of patience and adjustment to your strategy or loadout, you can persevere. Bleak Faith really shines in its map visuals and customization elements. Each map area offers a distinct visual style that still strives to maintain a sense of wonder, dread, and emptiness. Giving you access to every mastery element and ability early on in the game really helps maintain a focused build for your character, while having 5 upgrade slots for equipment still leaves room to multi-class a bit and open up additional combat strategies without expending too much effort. The only tutorials the game offers are in text format that you can access at any time throughout the game, most of which are pretty commonplace, making the game mechanics fairly easy to pick up, especially for genre veterans. Some enemy visuals are also well done, along with enemy placement. Visiting the sewers, you come across a giant creature with a stance and a body figure that's almost gorilla-like, its face resembling a stoic statue with a large mass below its chin, the mass opening up to reveal sharp teeth and a long barbed tongue, while occasionally trying to spit toxic spores all over you. As mentioned, there is also some timely enemy placement. Walking down an abandoned tunnel for a length of time feeling secure in your loneliness only to see a new mutated scorpion enemy rushing toward you from the distance, or passing an archway to have 2 enemies swinging their axes at you from both sides. While the combat is fun and has pretty good flow to it, attacking and dodging can feel slightly clunky at times. Some of the enemy AI for standard enemies is pretty bad. For a number of the larger enemies, they will just randomly attack away from you and sometimes be unable to hit you while you pummel them from below. The animations for enemy attacks and environment interactions can be a little sloppy, nothing horrendous, but definitely noticeable. I appreciate that a lot of the elements in the game try to keep its themes and mystery intact, but a bunch of lore pieces reiterate similar things, which makes reading them less interesting as a whole. Overall, Bleak Faith Forsaken is a decent Souls-like experience if you can put up with some of the more unpolished aspects in the combat and animations. Its enigmatic and dark story is slightly alluring, even if a little overdone at times. I think most people will enjoy the game's exploration elements, even if you have mixed feelings about the combat and its slightly easier difficulty from the norm. Definitely recommend checking it out for people who want an easier Souls-like experience, but leaning more towards a try-it for Souls veterans.
And scene.
Anyway, that is it for this episode. Chris, thanks for coming on, doing your thing, and hanging out with me for the last review. Big thanks to everyone on the first half of the episode for doing their thing. Music to end the show, we're going to play some more Guitaru Man. Do you have a favorite from the game?
It's really hard to pick one, but I'm going to go ahead and go with the King Bee Blues.
Sounds good.
Love that one.
So we are going to wrap up the show with some King Bee Blues. Sound good?
Sweet. Sounds funky.
Any final words?
No, I guess I'll see you in a different house next time.
Everybody, there's a new king in town. Get ready. Mojo, Mojo, Mojo King Bee!
fucking know.